Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, sponsored by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world. Come on, you know what it is. St. Petersburg, Florida. Been a cooler name or a cooler action hero anywhere? I can't remember exactly when, during the 1960s, that I first saw the old Universal serials repeated on television featuring Buster Crabbe as Flash, but I was hooked for life. As I grew older, I was a sucker for any medium selling Flash Gordon stories, whether it was comic books or cartoons, or that really horrible 1980 Flash Gordon movie starring Sam J. Jones, who later added another red mark on his resume by playing the Spirit in an ABC TV series pilot. It did spawn a good song by Queen, though. I still like that part. Anyway, if you've never caught Flash Gordon, you owe it to yourself to track down a collection of the old movie serials or a copy of the new book, Al Williamson's Flash Gordon, A Lifelong Vision of the Heroic. Williamson drew many of the iterations of Flash published during the last 60 years. And while Alex Raymond created the character and gave him life, it was really Williamson who brought the spacefaring adventurer to life for generations of fans. Now, this beautiful new coffee table book lets Williamson's work breathe in a large size that will dazzle and amaze you. Now, joining me to talk about Al Williamson's Flash Gordon is the man who wrote the text for the book, Mark Schultz. Now, as an artist himself, Schultz is the creator of Xenozoic Tales, a comic featuring the crazy interaction of Cadillacs and dinosaurs. In fact, it was adapted as a Saturday morning cartoon several years ago called, you guessed it, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. Mark, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, hello, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Good. Thank you.
I want to apologize right up front that little bit of sound from the old Flash Gordon serial from the 40s was maybe a little hard on the ears. I couldn't quite tell how it was going to turn out until I actually played it, so I apologize if I broke any eardrums out there.
It's a pretty good audio example, though, of just how intense and how much action they packed into those serials.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny, I had to watch several of them, not that it was a challenge, but I watched several of them looking for a good, you know, clip, and I was very surprised how spread out the dialogue is. There's a lot of they did a lot with sound and special effects, and there's not that much talking in those movies.
No, they kept them moving. They knew who their audience was, and they knew what their audience wanted. And of course that intensity of action and the choreography that was behind it that made it so entertaining. Was a great influence on Al Williamson.
Hmm. Well, let's start here. When did you first encounter Flash Gordon? How old were you? Where were you?
You know, that's one of those. Flash Gordon is one of those things I don't think I know. It was always kind of since before I can remember. He was part of my consciousness. I do believe I saw him in his Sunday strip incarnations in the late 50s, 60s. And the first thing that made a huge impression on me was I saw when I was around, I would guess, 10 years old, one of the restructuring of the serials they did and marketed in the 60s. They took Flash Gordon's Trip to Mars serial and condensed it down to a two-and-a-half-hour version that was showing as a matinee with cartoons and magic shows and stuff at a local theater. And I was astounded. This was something completely from another planet.
It really is different. And if you haven't seen it, I remember telling my wife about it many years ago when we first married, and telling her about, she had never heard of any of the serials. And you know, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, it used to be in the 40s, that Saturday morning you would go to the movie theater and there'd be a series of short adventures. There were continuing adventures, and we refer to them as serials. Usually, I think, 13 episodes, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. And so I remember telling my wife about it, and she thought I was crazy. And we found a VHS version of Captain Marvel.
One of the
best. Yeah, it was tremendous. And we started watching it, and I thought, oh, she's going to be so bored with this. But she was the one who was like, no, come on, we got to keep watching it. You know, she gets addicted to these things. And so we'd sit over 2 days, we'd watch these. I mean, it takes a bit of time when you do all 13 in a row. But it's like this world that we've missed, and there've been some movie directors in the last 10 or 15 years who've tried to recapture that. Sky Captain, I guess, was probably one.
Sure.
Doesn't always quite work, and it's a genre that you can't quite get to it. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that, of course, it was George Lucas with Star Wars that that absolutely dug back and paid homage to the serials with Star Wars, and then even more so with he and Lucas and Spielberg together on the Indiana Jones films.
Absolutely.
And you're right, they do pull out certain elements that work, you know, that sense of nonstop action and you know, the forward propulsiveness. But there is something lost, you're right, when it's not in that serial form where you'd see a 12, 15-minute installment once a week, and you were left with this spectacular cliffhanger that would draw you back, hopefully, the following week to see what happens next. It's a whole different rhythm, a whole different way of receiving entertainment that I guess you can maybe slightly analogize to television today that leaves you with a cliffhanger so you come back to see the next episode. But it's not the same thing when you're not seeing it in a theater with a bunch of other people, you know, in a dark theater and a big screen. It's a different experience.
And of course, these were all black and white, and the special effects were incredibly primitive, but they worked for the time, you know?
Oh, absolutely, and they were pretty state-of-the-art for the time. Even though these were not A Hollywood productions, these were not the big, you know, lavish, heavily promoted productions, there's still a huge degree of craftsmanship the model work, the special effects were pretty darn impressive for the time. When you compare them even to the A-list productions in Hollywood, many of these serials had that high degree of craftsmanship and professionalism and polish that you wouldn't necessarily expect from a low-budget production.
Mm. Well, so tie this all in. I started off with a clip of Flash Gordon in the movies, and we're talking a little bit about the serials. Now bring us full circle and tell us where artist Al Williamson fits in with Flash Gordon, I should say.
Well, one of the most important serials, just to kind of touch base again with the serials, was, as we've been discussing, was Flash Gordon, which was created and first appeared in 1934. It was created by Alex Raymond, who you mentioned earlier, and had an enormous influence on upcoming generations of cartoonists. Flash Gordon, as drawn by Raymond, it was just a very, very evocative a strip with lots of gorgeous women, fantastic otherworldly machinery and creatures and situations that really just happened at the right time, drew in a whole audience of not only, it was hugely popular with the the general reading public, but also with a whole generation of kids, guys that would become important cartoonists. One of these was Al Williamson. And Al Williamson as a kid was first turned on to Flash Gordon through the serial incarnations, watching Buster Crabbe play Flash Gordon in those serials we're talking about. But those inspired him so much that he went and looked closely at Alex Raymond's strip and just became a huge fan, and you might say an acolyte of Alex Raymond's work. And that, at the early age of 10, 11 years old, gave him a direction and a framework in his life that followed through his entire career. He started drawing Flash Gordon immediately after seeing that first serial, and he continued drawing Flash professionally through his entire career. It was his touchstone. It was the thing that he really identified with the most.
And he did a hell of a job.
Oh, yeah. There was a very personal, I guess what I'm saying is there was a very personal identification with Flash and that world and the heroism that Flash represented, and kind of thus the subtitle of our book.
I want to give out our phone number if anyone's would like to get in on this conversation. If you've got a comment or a question for artist Mark Schultz, who wrote the text for the new book, Al Williamson's Flash Gordon, A Lifelong Vision of the Heroic, you can give us a call at 1-646-595-3135. We'll go to the phones in just a minute, see if there's anybody out there. How did Al first get do you know how he got his first job drawing Flash?
He got his first work assisting on the Flash Gordon Daily comic strip, which was drawn by Dan Barry. And Dan Barry was in search of some assistance, and he was aware of Al Williamson's work. Al had established himself as an up-and-coming superstar doing science fiction comics at the legendary EC Publications. Barry kind of cherry-picked him to help with a couple of months' continuity, and I should say a couple of weeks' continuity. And that was Al's first actual connection professionally with Flash Gordon. But he was always looking for the opportunity to draw the strip and return it to the kind of scientific romance that Alex Raymond had originally envisioned the character as. But by the time Al was helping Don Barry on the strip, it had grown into something else, a little more of a hard science type of science fiction adventure series. And Al longed to get it back to Raymond's original vision. In the early 60s, that opportunity did finally come when King Syndicate, the owners of Flash Gordon, decided to open up their own comic wing of their empire and create new Flash Gordon adventures. And Al got the gig, and he was able to, through three issues, contribute six new Flash Gordon stories that kind of reinvigorized the character and returned him, as Al wanted to do, to that original science romance type of character that Raymond had created.
Mark, I want to see. I think we've got a call here for you, so let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on Mr. Media Radio with Mark Schultz.
Hi, how you doing? My name is Chris, calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hey, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Just wanted to say, hey, I'm a big fan of your own work as well as Al Williamson's work, and big fan of your publications. You know, through Flesk and John Fleskus there, and your various drawings. So I look forward to seeing more of those in the future.
Hey, thanks, Chris. I'm glad you mentioned Flesk Publications. I work with John Flesk, the publisher, on my own publications, as well as, you know, bringing him projects that I think are worthwhile, and one of those was this Al Williamson's Flash Gordon book. And the reason I bring them to John is he just does the best, I believe, production work being done in the field right now. Their books are gorgeous because John sweats bullets to make them that way.
Right. I have most of his other publications also, and yeah, I'm a big fan of what he's doing to hopefully, you know, keep the interest in that type of classic, you know, illustration alive and things like that. But I did have a question, or wanted to kind of back to Al Williamson and his latest, you know, in this Flash Gordon book. I was hoping you might, I know you just mentioned there Alex Raymond, and might expand upon really the influence of Alex Raymond, and maybe the resurgence, and even in your own work on your own strip, of the adventure, you know, the adventure strip kind of coming back, you know, with undoubtedly you've been influenced by Alex Raymond, you know, a little bit artistically, and maybe even more so just as that whole, you know, the adventure strip with your own work there, if you might maybe talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think you touch on the key thing is that it's all a continuity. One generation, one decade of artists leading to another. When I started in the business back in 86, 87, I met Al shortly after I had started working professionally, and he had been a big influence on me, he and Wally Wood especially, and I showing him my work, and he says, and I was saying, you know, look, this particular figure, this panel, I swiped that from you, I took that from something you had done, and he said, well, you know, Mark, if you like my stuff and you like Wally Wood stuff, you got to go deeper than that. You got to go to the guys who influenced us. And I had always been aware of guys like Alex Raymond and Hal Foster, who had done Tarzan and Prince Valiant, and Milton Caniff, the grand men of the business of the adventure comic strips, who had influenced the comic book artists that came after. But since I had grown up with them, I kind of had, I don't know, slotted them in the back of my mind and wasn't paying attention to them like I should. But Al kind of opened my eyes to start digging deeper, and that's a great process, because you start going back, and the more you dig deeper, the more you learn, the greater variety of artists you find out, because you find out then, well, who influenced Alex Raymond, and that goes back to the early 19th century American illustrators, and then who influenced them, and it just opens up whole worlds, and make yourself a better artist by doing that.
Right. Well, even myself personally, I consider myself kind of a, you know, almost third generation kind of EC Comics fan, you know, having not been around when they originally came out, and, you know, when Al was working for them, but discovered them, you know, through just getting into older and older comics, discovering the Russ Cochran, you know, publications and reprint series, and that he eventually led me back to Alex Raymond and Hal Foster and, you know, Flash Gordon and Prince Valiant, you know, through his own love of those guys and his own publications from the 70s, you know. And I just sent a lengthy email, actually, to John Fleskus about when is somebody, maybe you can help him out with this, you know, when is somebody going to step up to the plate and actually publish a definitive kind of Alex Raymond, Flash Gordon, you know, art book, let's say, you know, here you guys have done, you know, the Al Williamson Flash Gordon, let's say, art book, you know, but when is somebody going to finally get a hold of, you know, scan or take pictures of those surviving original pieces of Alex Raymond, you know, Flash Gordon pages and put them together in oversized format and stuff? I know that's kind of off topic, so I'll just throw that out there. But
well, it's an absolute dream project. I mean, it is worthwhile and it should be done. The difficulty in that is that those the originals that are still, that we know still exist, are scattered to the four winds for the most part. The thing that made the Al Williamson Flash Gordon book very doable was the fact that Al and his family have retained the vast majority of his Flash Gordon work.
Right.
So it was so we did go to the originals and scanned them anew to get the reproduction we wanted, but it was relatively easy because most of it was one-stop shopping. It was there.
Right.
But boy, I think what you're talking about is a wonderful project, but it's just finding the person who has time and energy to actually locate all those.
Well, hopefully Al still has some of his originals. Maybe that's a good starting point, right? If
Yep. There are, you know what, you could do a nice collection, a portfolio of the ones we know, but it would be very spotty. There's a lot of stuff I believe that is still unaccounted for or maybe is not even in existence anymore. But
Right. No, I understand exactly. One of those dream projects, undoubtedly. But one last thing, and then I'll hang up. I won't take up all your time. But I was wondering if you might be able to comment on Al and just his health. I'd heard some rumors. Is he, you know, doing okay or not doing okay? I won't get into specifics, but I mean, I just had heard some things. Hopefully, we're not about to lose another, you know, another. I mean, I know everyone from that generation is kind of getting up there. You know, but how is he doing? You know, if you could comment on that.
Al's doing okay, and but he does have some health issues, and the family has requested privacy, and it's
right.
It's not my place to discuss them.
Right.
But Al is still I can tell you, still a happy individual, and is still surrounded by the things he loves. So he's doing well considering all the circumstances.
Right, right. No, I completely understand. So, all right. Well, thanks. I'll let you guys get back to it. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. I wanted to ask you, Mark, as a student of, you know, comics and cartooning, can you give us a kind of a technical explanation of what sets Al's work apart?
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, he's just a superior draftsman.
Hmm.
He really does have, and that's kind of a broad term. It covers a lot of things, but Al has a very discerning eye for doing, especially the human figure, in proportions that are very pleasing, very flowing, very heroic, if you will. He does very heroic-looking men and very gorgeous women, and vice versa sometimes. But beyond that, he has a technique for inking his work, for finishing his work in ink, that has a very flowing, elegant appeal to it. He's very good technically. Again, I'm getting the technical stuff here, but he's very good at spotting his blacks, that is, arranging the pattern of black and white on his panels and pages to create very very appealing, very pleasurable arrangements, compositions that just you enjoy looking at, that lead the eye very nicely through the page. So on that level, he's very adept. I think the one thing that differentiates Al from just about any other cartoonist that has existed is Al's ability to choreograph action sequences, fight sequences especially, and to portray figures in motion. And getting back to the serials, a lot of Al's inspiration from that came from his observation of the remarkable choreography that went into the action and fight scenes in serials. Al was able to take that choreography, that movement from a medium that is actually kinetic, is actually in movement, and transfer it to a static medium, a medium that's composed of still images, but somehow retain that feeling of action, of propulsion, of movement, retain the illusion of it, I should say. And I think that's what makes him brilliant. I think that what sets him as ahead and above, or at least puts him in a different a league that very few have been able to attain themselves, and keeps him appealing for new generations that keep coming along, rediscovering him. It doesn't get old. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't look dated.
A lot of the guys from that generation, I think that could be said of. What other works of Al's would you refer someone to if they're interested in discovering the greater breadth of his career?
Well, boy, there's a lot. Al had a long career from the late 40s up to the turn of the century. I guess if you were going to start someplace, you'd want to start with his EC science fiction work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that work is still kind of, you have to say it's immature. It's wonderful. And he was a wonderful draftsman at that time, but he hadn't refined his inking style yet. He hadn't kind of mastered all the language of storytelling in comics. But it's not only wonderful, exciting work that's just filled with energy and enthusiasm, but it was very inspirational on generations of cartoonists that came after him. So it's important to look at his EC science fiction work. Then in the 60s, Flash Gordon work, King Comics Flash Gordon work that we have reprinted in this Flash Gordon volume. Going into the late 60s and 70s, he did a 13-year run on Secret Agent Corrigan, the comic strip, daily comic strip with Archie Goodwin writing it. And that's just wonderful work, and it shows his ability to adapt his talent to doing a comic strip format. And then after finishing his run on Secret Agent Corrigan, Goodwin and he continued on to do a 3-year run on the Star Wars comic strip that appeared both as a daily and a Sunday strip. And that's marvelous stuff, too.
Wow.
So if you're looking for high points, I think those are the ones I would recommend, though I'm sure other aficionados of Williamson would disagree and have their own list to recommend.
And there are Mark Schultz fans who will hear this and who will shoot me if I don't ask what you are up to next. What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on a book for Flesk Publications. I've written a short story, a little novelette called Storms at Sea, which I'm illustrating, and I'm planning to have that out next year. It's going to be a heavily illustrated text. In fact, if I do this right, the weight of illustrations, the information you get from the illustrations and the information you get from the text will equal each other. And I'm currently writing Prince Valiant, which Gary Gianni draws for the Sunday Funnies. Working on a couple other writing projects that I can't discuss right now. And I'm always accumulating, doing images that I accumulate and put out every year or so into my various drawing series.
And for those who want to know, is there any chance of more Xenozoic Tales?
Yeah, that's always the goal. My ongoing goal is to find the time and the financial cushion that allows me to get back into that very labor-consumptive project. But yeah, that's I do not want to let Xenozoic Tales hanging, even though it's been hanging there for over 10 years. It's every bit my goal to get back to it and conclude the story arc I left hanging and get back to adventures in addition to that.
That's one of those things, I like to put it in the category for me anyway, of the Rocketeer. It's like you just can't get enough of those stories. It's such a fascinating combination of elements, and it's just, you can't get tired of it. So I hope we'll see you get to return to that before too long.
And, well, I appreciate that. Anytime I'm mentioned in the same breath as the Rocketeer, it's a good day. So Dave Stevens' work on the Rocketeer was a huge influence on drawing me back into comics after I had left comics behind in the mid-70s, but in the early 80s when I saw what was happening with guys like with Dave and the Hernandez Brothers Love and Rockets and Howard Chaykin's American Flag, that kind of showed me that there was exciting stuff being done in comics, stuff that I could relate to, and it kind of pulled me back in and inspired and in turn inspired Xenozoic Tales.
Well, we're going to run out of time, so I want to tell everybody you can order Al Williamson's Flash Gordon, A Lifelong Vision of the Heroic, at great bookstores everywhere, or order it online at MrMedia.com, Amazon.com, and you can learn more about this and other great art books, including books by Mark Schultz, at FleskPublications.com. It's F-L-E-S-K Publications.com. Mark, do you have a site of your own that you want to mention, or can people find you out there in Facebook land, that kind of stuff?
Well, I still don't have a website up. It's in process. I'm going to have it up by the end of this year. But in the meantime, I do recommend people going to the Flesk website because John K. keeps them posted, keeps regular posts regarding what I'm up to, what publications I have coming up, what events. So yeah, he's the best source right now.
All right, very good. Well, Mark, it was great to get to talk to you. I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but it's a really wonderful book. Whether you're a Flash Gordon fan or an Al Williamson fan or probably even a Mark Schultz fan, I really recommend you pick up this book. It will not disappoint. And, Mark, thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thanks, Bob. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good luck to you.
Thank you. You too.
All right. And, folks, for more interviews with your favorite comic book, comic strip, and graphic novel artists and writers, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Josh Neufeld, Patrick McDonald, Ray Billingsley, Jerry Scott, Rick Kirkman, Jim Borgman, John Rosenberg, Stefan Pastis, Mark Tatulli, Mort Walker, Dennis Kitchen, Drew Friedman, Dave Gibbons, Joe Sinnott, Howard Cruz, Mark Chiarello, Gene Colan, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Digital Journal, Vox, Podcast Pickle, MediaFly, Blueberry, Zencast, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string in a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and spend it with us. And let's go out with the best part of that 1980 Flash Gordon movie, a little clip from Queen's Flash Gordon. Thanks for listening.